Welcome to GradCast from Syracuse University. My name is Glenn Wright. My guest today is Dylan Moore, who is SU's Open Scholarship Librarian. We're going to be talking about dissertations primarily for you PhD students and the potentially thorny issue of permissions that you may need for material that you quote, reproduce, or otherwise use in your dissertation before you can submit your final version, get it put up on ProQuest, and get your degree. So Dylan's areas of responsibility in general include scholarly communication, including these sorts of issues. And as I understand it, he is also not far from submitting his own dissertation at the University of Minnesota. So he can really see this from both sides. So Dylan Moore, thank you so much for joining us on GradCast.
Thank you so much for having me, Glenn.
Okay, so this issue of permissions for material that you're incorporating into your dissertation, usually that is going to be a matter of copyright. So maybe you could start off and just give us a little overview of exactly what copyright is from the dissertation writer's perspective, and how you can know or infer if the stuff that you're using in your dissertation is in fact under copyright.
Yeah, so it's a great question. And I think the best place to begin is to realize that in the United States, copyright is given to you the minute you create something and put it in fixed form. Well, I shouldn't say anything, but most things. So your dissertation, for example, once it's written as a document on your computer, you have copyright granted to you automatically. And so when you're thinking about other things that you might be using or quoting or reproducing in your work, think about the fact that those authors also have copyright given to them automatically the minute they created whatever you're working with. So when you're asking yourself whether or not this might be under copyright, a safe rule of thumb is to assume that yes, it is under copyright. There are some notable exceptions to that, length or how long ago it was published and things like that, that we'll probably get into. But general rule of thumb is that you need to assume that most things you are working with will have some type of copyright protection on them.
Okay, so then it's incumbent upon you to get permissions from the copyright holder, who may or may not be the person who created the material that you're using. So how do you figure that out? How do you find out who the actual copyright holder is for the material?
So there's kind of a checklist you can go through. First of all, the obvious place to go would be the author. If you're quoting from a journal article, which is an easy one, you can contact the journal. You can contact the author. There are several places you can go to kind of track that work down. A lot of journals will say right away who has copyright over whatever work you're reading. It'll say in the pages themselves. But let's say you're working with something that's like, I don't know, a zine published in the 80s. That's going to probably be a little more difficult to track down. That's probably going to be the author you're going to need to find. It's probably no longer in print. So there may be cases where it's going to require some detective work on your side.
Yeah, okay. And it's also, I believe, the case that copyright will expire at some point too, right? Or I guess there are certain conditions where it can be renewed. Could you just kind of flesh that out briefly?
Yeah. So the safest one is that pretty much anything published before at this point, 1928, will be in what's called the public domain. And that's where all copyright protections expire for any work. So if you're working with anything published before that date, you're likely safe to not have to track down permissions. Okay. Still probably cite whatever work you're pulling from, but you don't have to track down any types of permissions on that. Like you alluded to, there can be some instances where copyright is extended for some of these things, especially, you know, famous works of literature and things like that. If there are people who have inherited that estate and want to extend the right on, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a good example, but I can't think of one. But there may be cases where just checking is probably in your best interest to make sure.
Okay, so it might take a little detective work. You think you have an idea about who the copyright holder is. You try to reach out to them. You may or may not get referred to someone else. But what if you just can't find anybody out there who declares themselves to be the copyright holder and it's kind of ambiguous? Can you go ahead and use that? Can you sort of like demonstrate that you've done your due diligence trying to find the copyright holder? Are there kind of like a framework along those lines?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. And these are works that would be called orphan works, where the copyright holder cannot be tracked down, may have died, and nobody inherited that that work. The way I like to think about this, and I think a lot of people don't like to hear this, is that copyright is not black and white. There's not a perfectly safe answer, and there's not, you know, an answer that says definitively in some cases you can't do something. Rather, I think the better way to think about this is kind of a risk management strategy. And so if you come up against a work where you cannot track down the author, you need to ask yourself a few questions. Okay, like how hard did you try? Did you just Google to see if you can find it? You mentioned due diligence, which is something that, you know, you can use in your defense were an infringement case brought up against you. But if you just did a Google search, due diligence is probably not, that's not due diligence. So did you go to the Copyright Clearance Center? Did you try to track down heirs of the work? I mean, you really, really want to have a really long and very importantly documented track record of trying to track down that copyright holder. If you don't have that, it's going to be very easy to prove for somebody who may have brought an infringement case against you that you did not do your due diligence in a way that would be sufficient in a court. So yeah, and in that sense, it's I think important to think of copyright in those instances as kind of a risk management issue.
Yeah. So like, keep your emails, like all that kind of stuff. Any attempt at communication, be able to document that. Yeah,
absolutely.
So a couple of scenarios that could play out. One is that you think you know who the copyright holder is. You reach out and they don't get back to you. Or maybe they get back to you and they say, sure, I'll give you permission on these terms, which could include remuneration for the right to reuse the work or any number of other things that they just come up with, right? They more or less have carte blanche to specify the terms under which you can reuse their work. How does that typically play out? And what's your advice in those cases? Like either you can't get a response or you get a response that isn't really great for you in terms of like what you're going to have to do to satisfy their demands.
Yes. So those are two unfortunately fairly common examples. So the first one, if you simply don't hear back, it's important to remember that copyright holders are under no obligation to respond to you. Likewise, you don't have to respond to anybody who's asking to use your work. So if they don't respond, that does not give you permission to use their work.
Okay.
The shorthand answer there. An important thing that we could probably tack onto that is, as you're putting your dissertation together, it's important to remember that the permissions work is on someone else's timeline. That's not something you can control. So it may take a day for someone to get back to you. It may take a year and they may never get back to you. So getting that work started very early is very important because you don't want to be trying to file your dissertation and realize that you have 10 works that you've never heard back from anybody and now you need to find a workaround, which kind of gets us to maybe your next question. So yes, copyright holders do have the ability to specify how exactly you can use their work, which may indeed, they are certainly able to ask for money. They can provide stipulations about how you can distribute it, meaning that they could say you can't put it in electronic form. And so that's a big problem because you're going to be filing a dissertation in electronic form.
Yep.
So those are good things when you secure your permissions to make sure that you have the ability to circulate this in the way that it's going to be circulated. If they're asking for money, I mean, you could always counter and say, look, this is a dissertation. I'm not making money on this. That might be an option. Maybe they'll have some compassion there. But there are other ways that you can, let's say, like you said, you come up into a situation that they're asking for an exorbitant amount of money and you just can't pay it. Let's say, for example, it's a graph. I don't know why this comes to mind, but there's a graph. One way you might be able to get around that, or you can get around that, is rather than reproduce the graph, describe the contents of the graph, credit the author, and then you can even link out to the original. Say the original is here. You know, we live in an age where that type of networked information is possible. It's not like the old days where you can't do that as well. Right. And that will get you out of needing to secure permissions because you have not reproduced or redistributed the original work.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. So, but because that's for sure, if you're a dissertation writer and you find yourself in that situation where there's an obstacle to getting the permission, you're going to want to try to come up with some kind of a runaround on that. And so one possible one, I guess, or so I understand, is this concept of fair use, where there may be certain things that you can do to modify or otherwise kind of manipulate the material so that it falls under this doctrine of fair use and therefore not requiring you to get explicit permission. I know that's also kind of a nebulous area, but could you just kind of like give us the overview of that whole concept and how that might work in terms of a dissertation?
Yeah, so generally, well, again, I think you just touched on it, but I think there is a misconception that you can use anything in your dissertation because you're commenting on it in kind of a scholarly fashion and it will fall under fair use. And that is not the case. Fair use is not black and white by any means. So again, you kind of have to think of it as like a risk management situation. So you can, of course, take, you know, the classic academic example is you can quote a passage from a book and then you can comment on it. You know, as long as you cite the author, and you don't take two chapters of that book, put it in your dissertation and put two lines of comment, that'll count as fair use. And so fair use is kind of evaluated based on the type of work you're using, the medium that the work is in, and the amount you've copied, and whether or not there's any effect on its market value. So if you kind of like work through how your use of that thing is going to be affected by those four things, you can kind of make that risk management determination. There are some really great documents out there. I know Cornell Libraries has a fair use checklist that you can actually go through and check, okay, does this take a small amount or whatever? And just literally go through and you'll have a pretty good idea of whether or not this is going to fall under fair use. The other example I think is worth noting is that infringement cases, like there are no copyright police, right? So I could take something you've written, Glenn, and reproduce it verbatim, go sell it. But unless you bring a case against me, nobody else is going to come. There's no police force that's going to come after me. So it's incumbent upon you to come after me. And so if you think about it that way, if you reproduce, you'll need the financial resources and the legal resources to do that. And so let's say I am reproducing a chunk of a Marvel film. They've got the financial resources and the legal resources to come after me, and they will. If I'm working with a dissertation written in 1975 that doesn't have a copyright statement at the beginning, the author is dead, it was never published anywhere else. Yep. The chances of that infringement case being brought against me are much, much smaller.
Yeah.
And so when I'm kind of thinking about fair use, those are also factors I like to think about.
Yeah, right. And so like you said, you know, don't quote too much, break it up. Maybe, you know, if you're talking about like written text that you're quoting, maybe paraphrase parts of it rather than reproducing it directly, that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
And you mentioned a case earlier about a graph. Okay. And I'm curious about this. So that would be if you're just like reproducing straight a graph, let's say, from a journal article that was published, that would be something that you would need permission to reproduce. But what if you took that same data and represented it some other way, like turned it into a table or something else? And that was you who did that transformative work, but it's still the same data. How would that work in terms of fair use?
That's a sticky one. because I'm not positive on this. I would want to check with somebody, but I feel like that could be filed under some type of derivative work, which would still have some type of copyright protection there. And to be safe, this is another case where I might, you know, describe the data, describe the findings, cite out. And again, if that graph is that important, again, we live in a world where dissertations can be linked very easily. You can point out to that original work and people are not going to have too much difficult finding it. It's not like, you know, this was, you know, 1920, where we would have to go to a library in like Hamburg, Germany to find this original thing. There are easier ways to deal with that now that you don't have to, you don't have to get yourself in like that warm of water without unneededly, let's say, or yeah.
Yeah. So linking out to something that's available online, but by the same token, it's not the case that simply because it is out there online and someone could access it for free that way, that it's then okay for you to put it in your dissertation without getting the permission, right? It's still,
yeah, that's a very good
point. It's out there for free doesn't mean that you can use it for free.
Right. That's a very good point. And I think there's a misconception that, especially with the emergence of open access, that folks feel that anything open access also means they can use it kind of with impunity. Again, it goes back to where we started, that copyright is granted at the minute you fix something in a tangible form. So, you know, a blog post online is still under copyright.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Now, so another way to avoid the need to get permissions would be to seek out material that you know is going to be permission-free in the first place. And if it's something that's a reasonable alternative to material that is under copyright, that could be a way that you could avoid getting into that situation in the first place. So what are some places that you could go or try to find material that you know is not going to pose this kind of problem?
Yeah, so the two big ones to be familiar with, and we've touched on one already, and that is public domain. So anything that falls in the public domain, you can use without having to secure permissions. What exactly falls under public domain kind of varies. It can be a specific amount of years past the death of the author, which varies by country. So you want to be kind of aware of that. Anything published in the United States, like we mentioned earlier, before 1928, you can use. But the other one, and this is a more recent development, and one that you'll have to use when you, if you choose to make your dissertation open access, is what's called a Creative Commons license, and any work that's been licensed under a Creative Commons license. And the really quick version of what that is this is a license that you as an author can kind of layer on top of your copyright rights. And what it does is tell people exactly how they can use your work without having to secure your permission.
Yeah.
So the broadest version of a Creative Commons license is a CC BY version, which means that anybody can use your work any way they want. All they have to do is cite you. So if you find a work that is licensed under a Creative Commons license, you do not have to secure the permissions from the author to use it, but there may be stipulations on how you can use it. They may stipulate, for example, that you cannot sell or create or make any profit from whatever you make from their work. They might say you can't make any derivative works. So if it's a poem, you can't make it into a play. But anything that's under a Creative Commons license, you do not need to seek the permission of the author.
Yeah, okay. So you got to know what the specific stipulations are and make sure that your use of it can aligns with that. Yeah, okay, right. That makes sense. Now, so what about your own stuff? I know from talking to you and from our degree certification specialist in the graduate school, Christina Ashley, that it sounds to me like maybe the most common issue, permissions-wise, that dissertation writers come across is when, you know, they've got their own material that they've written for their dissertation, but maybe you've published a chunk of that already, like in a journal article or some other kind of scholarly venue. Do you just get a free pass to reuse that material, or how does that work?
So first, I guess, congrats if you've got some work published before you've graduated. That's a good thing. No, you do not get a free pass. And so this is very important to understand as younger scholars, is to read the contract that you get from your publisher, because you are signing away some of those rights that are given to you once you create your work, your copyright rights. You are giving away some or all of them to your publisher.
Yeah.
And so if you are writing a dissertation and you get a contract that is asking you to give the entire copyright distribution and everything away to that journal, know that you're going to have to come back to that journal at the end of your PhD and ask them for permission to reproduce that in your dissertation.
Okay.
So one thing that I think is really important is to read that and know that you have the ability to negotiate that. That's not set in stone. When you get a contract from your publisher, you can say, hey, I'm a graduate student. I need to put this in a dissertation. We need to carve out a space in this contract that allows me to do so. And okay. A lot of times you have the ability to make that change. So keep that in mind. Otherwise, like I said earlier, you'll have to go back to your publisher and ask for permission.
Okay. And my impression is that typically, even if that exception for a dissertation is not something that's already stipulated in the publication agreement, that generally, even if it's not there and you've already signed it, that if you go back to the publisher and say, hey, it's my dissertation, most scholarly publishers are probably going to be pretty much okay with the idea of you using it for that purpose, right?
Well, I personally have not heard of a publisher coming back and saying, no, you cannot, but they are certainly within their rights to do so. So this is something to keep in mind, and you don't want to get to the end of your PhD and realize you can't use chapter 3.
Yep, exactly. Okay. So now let's say you've done all this work and you've gotten your permissions that you think you need. Well, first of all, how does the exact mechanics of this submission process work in terms of permissions that you might need for your dissertation? Like, is there someone either at the graduate school or at the library who's going to look at your dissertation and figure out, hey, you needed permission for this and I don't see it? Or like, what specific form am I as the dissertation writer going to have to present my permissions in? Like, is there a standard template where they grant permission, or could they just like write you an email and say, yes, it's fine to use it in your dissertation? Like, what are you going to need to actually provide to document this?
Yeah. So in terms of what permissions actually look like, it can vary. Depending, again, if we're going to like work with a zine from the 80s, that likely is going to take the form of an email. So save that email, and that's going to be your permissions. Make sure it's explicit what they're granting you in their language. Kind of press them to make sure it's there. But if you're working with a major publisher, you're going to have to go through their copyright distribution center, and they're going to give you kind of a standardized form. You're likely going to have to pay a little something or a lot of something. So it's going to depend on kind of the scale of the operation you're working with. In terms of where this material is going to end up, whether the libraries have anything to do with it, we don't do anything at the libraries. You don't have to present us with anything, that's for sure. We can help you and advise you on questions with permissions. We unfortunately don't have the staffing to seek permissions out for you. We can, again, give you advice on how to do it and what to do if you're having trouble, but we're not going to do that for you. In terms of what the graduate school asks here, I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah, and since I'm an employee of the graduate school, you might think that I would be able to answer that question. Unfortunately, this is largely kind of like terra incognita for me. But so it sounds like basically the idea is you need to do your due diligence just in case there are repercussions for you later based on someone just finding on ProQuest or wherever your dissertation and saying, hey, I wrote that and I don't see that I'm appropriately credited. And by the way, you never asked me if it was okay to use that. Which given the frequency with which dissertations are consulted online, it's pretty easy now. So that's not in any way implausible that something like that could happen. So let's talk a little bit more about the submission process. You think you've got all the permissions you need, your text has been finalized and approved, your dissertation committee is happy, and then you're, as I understand it, you're obliged to to put it up on ProQuest in some form, which could just be the abstract if you embargo it initially for some period of time, just so all that's there is the abstract, not your full text. But then they also ask such things as, do you want to have it up on your IR, your institutional repository? And I know that can be kind of confusing for people who are all of a sudden at the last minute, like faced with this prospect and don't really understand the question. So could you unpack that a little bit? What are they talking about? And how should you think about that whole issue of the IR, institutional repository?
Yeah. So when you go to submit your dissertation, you will have one mandatory deposit and one optional deposit. The mandatory one is with ProQuest, and this is going to be the one that you will formally submit everything. Like you said, Glenn, you have the opportunity to embargo that, meaning you can put a block on the record itself and just have your abstract up for a certain amount of time. And that deposit will end up going into a paywall database called ProQuest Theses and Dissertations Global, which means it will be limited to folks with access to that database, largely people working at colleges, universities that want to access that material. Then you will have the option to deposit your dissertation in what's called an institutional repository at Syracuse. That's called Surface. And that is basically a big database for all the work that's created at Syracuse University, at Cornell, at NYU. Pretty much every major university has an institutional repository. And institutional repositories are open access, meaning that anyone with an internet connection will be able to access your work. So if making your work open access is a priority for any reason, whether that is driving reads, citations, or if it's more of a moral issue that you want your work to be seen by a wider audience, the institutional repository deposit will be a really good option for you.
Okay.
And you can do the same embargo on the Surface deposit if you want the institutional repository deposit. So if you don't want that to be released for, say, 2 years, you also have that option. But those are the two different deposits that you'll be asked about. And at the moment, our open access deposits for dissertations and theses, it ranges from semester to semester, somewhere between 88 and 94%. So the vast majority of folks are choosing to make their dissertation or theses open access, which I think is a great thing.
Yeah, well, it's great in terms of people being able to consult your scholarship that you worked so hard on. So
exactly.
That certainly makes sense. And then I understand that when you make this deposit, their ProQuest is also going to give you the opportunity to register your own copyright for the dissertation itself. And I think you said at the beginning, though, that copyright is automatically granted, like that, so there should be no need for you to take any extra steps. So could you talk a little bit about that? What would be the advantage, if any, in officially registering your copyright?
Yeah, so this is a big tripping point for a lot of people. yes, copyright is granted to you the minute you create your work. Where the registration of copyright matters is if you ever want to bring an infringement case against another party, you need to have your work registered.
Okay.
And so a couple of things we'll say there is, first of all, you can do the registration of the copyright yourself and go through the copyright office, and it'll cost you $45. ProQuest is asking $75. So what you're paying ProQuest for is their labor to do it for you. So if you just don't want to deal with it, you can have them do it. Otherwise, you can do it yourself for $45. Reasons why you might want to register your copyright. I think of it kind of like buying insurance for a flight. You're probably never going to need this, but it'll be nice to have if you ever do need it. Because like I said, if you want to bring a case against somebody for infringing on your work, it has to be registered. While you can retroactively register copyright, you cannot bring there are two different types of damages you could bring against someone, actual and statutory. The much easier one to actually bring forward in a court is statutory charges or statutory damages. you will not be able to file infringement for statutory damages if you haven't registered your copyright before that infringement took place.
Okay.
If this makes sense, it's kind of a big web of kind of legalese, but think of it as an insurance policy. That's just what I'd say. If you think that this might ever be used by somebody, it's not that much, especially if you're just doing it yourself.
Yeah. So register it beforehand. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, I mean, we're almost out of time here, Dylan, but obviously there's lots of kind of nebulous areas, like in terms of this situation with copyright and also with fair use and some of these other things that are in play, what's in the public domain. So if you're a confused dissertator, maybe you've got some obscure stuff in your dissertation, like a lot of people do. Is there any way that they can get help with that? Like their specific issues, like what resources are available to help people kind of wrap their heads around this?
Yeah. So exactly like you said, I think a lot of people are dismayed to learn that copyright and permissions are not black and white. So there are people to help around to help. So I'm always willing to help. So obviously I'm Dylan Moore. I'm at the libraries. You can email or reach out whenever you need to. We also have a person at the libraries who specifically deals with copyright and intellectual property issues. That email is cipa@syr.edu. He's very, very good and very patient and willing to work with you. That's a great resource to reach out to. So those are the two big ones here at Syracuse that can help you out. And please reach out to us. We're more than happy to help. Oh, we also have a music librarian, Amanda DuBose, who does a lot with sound and music copyright, which if anyone listening works in those fields is just a whole different ball of wax,
right?
And much more thorny. So she's a great resource as well.
Okay, terrific. Yeah. Well, Dylan, time has passed us by, but thanks so much. This has been very helpful, and appreciate you making an appearance with us today. You've been listening to GradCast from Syracuse University.